Hello, my name is Monica Lipschitz and I'm starting a new series of Rupert Open Studio podcasts. My first guest is Davinia Ann Robinson, Rupert's resident from London. This conversation turned up rather intimate. Over a cup of ceremonial cacao, we'll be talking about Davinia's work. Through her sculpture, sound, writing and performance, Davinia is often addressing personal interactions with colonial emotions she has encountered as a black female body. I really hope you enjoy listening. Please feel free to drop us a line if you have any comments, suggestions, and ideas regarding the format or the subject. I would also like to thank our sound designer, Antanas Dombrovskis, and composer Gaila Gricuta for creating this beautiful track leading us. Well, Davinia, it's so nice to have you here on my first episode as a guest.
Thank you for asking.
So we decided to drink a cacao with you, right?
Yeah.
Let's see where the cacao will lead us, to which paths.
By the end of this, we're going to be on a different plane.
I said I will keep like the first taste of the ritual cacao on air.
Yeah. Oh, do you want to smell it?
Yeah, let's do it.
It's nice.
Smells very nice.
Yeah. Really rich.
Wow. So this is cacao from Nicaragua.
Yeah, from Nicaragua. I only got this particular cacao just before I came to Rupert. So yeah, I hadn't bought from this company before, but it's like organic and it's like, yeah. So it's like good grade, good quality. The farmers are paid fair and well, so.
Okay, let me taste.
How do you find it?
No, actually, it's not something that I expected. But at the same time, since we were already getting used to it, since your first day here, remember you first came to Rupert and we already started drinking cacao?
Yeah.
So, of course, it's kind of a familiar, but it's much more raw.
Yeah, and
it's a
bitter.
Bit sour also.
Yeah, so true. It is sour actually. Yeah, like a kind of like a sort of sour grape sourness to it or something. Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? Because it smells, like I find with ceremonial cacao, it smells so different to like how it tastes in your mouth, but also familiar of that smell. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's really nice.
And the preparation of it, whether it's ceremonial or not, I enjoy that.
What is a ceremonial cacao?
I think it's a cacao, well, in my experience, it's a cacao that you use when sort of like connecting to like Mutre cacao or Mother cacao, as a way of like connecting to yourself and also the outer like environment as well. Well, at least that's how I use it. I've only ever done one guided ceremony with cacao, and then all the other ceremonies I've done have been by myself. So and that's quite interesting, like guiding myself in a way.
Who else could guide you better?
It's true. Like committing to that as well. Like it's a bit weird. But that's how I use ceremonial cacao and like honoring the cacao as like a sort of like a tool or an entity in my practice as a way of like dealing with colonial violences and exploring those emotions. So, yeah.
Because in that sense, cacao is a very, like a plant with a lot of history, right?
Yeah.
With a lot of histories.
Yeah, completely. And but I don't know. I mean, that's the thing I've got to admit. I don't know the deep history of cacao myself. It's more sort of like my experiential relationship with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but I'm...
You know, I mean, it's also just nice to use it as an experience, right? Mm. Like as a material.
Yeah.
It's in a way kind of, you know, it's brown, it's similar to soil, to clay.
Mm.
If it's dry and it's just like all those like dark materials from earth.
Yeah.
Just like mirroring.
Mm. And it's going to be affected by like the land as well. It will be affected by how the soil, yeah, the health of that soil that's growing. Yeah, just this like old traditional like plant medicine that then is like has a relationship to the ground and has a relationship to the people that tend it. And then back again has like a relationship to how it tends you. So like a circular relationship, which I really enjoy with it.
The first day that you came to Rupert, we were also were speaking about voice practices.
Oh, yeah.
And that voice, both speaking and singing and just kind of acknowledging your voice, right?
Yeah.
And maybe kind of, I don't know, this led me remembering this conversation with you also through drinking cacao. And how it seems like cacao like soothes your body.
Yeah.
And how probably a body, when it is safe, can also express itself, can alter the voice.
Yeah. Definitely, like, with a lot of the cacao ceremonies that I do by myself, I use it as a way of sort of accessing my voice and a way of... and not accessing my voice in a way where I'm kind of making legible words through my voice. It's very much sort of a practice of connecting to emotions felt. And often, well, all the time, emotions felt through colonial violences and sort of opening up and also opening up with the voice and the emotions to let those emotions come out. And yeah, so that's how I kind of use the cacao in that way. It's like this ritual of I'll drink the cacao, and then from doing that, then I'll sit for a while, and then I'll just begin to like make sounds with my voice. The only issue I have with that practice is finding I'm very like self-conscious, obviously, of doing that. And so finding suitable spaces where I don't feel like anyone else can hear me. So like when I did it at Rupert the first weekend that we were here, and I thought, oh, it's a Saturday, no one's going to be here. The building was really full that Saturday. And so I waited until like nighttime to do it. And I've done it in like flats that I've lived in as well. And I've had to wait until like the upstairs neighbours have gone on holiday, because then I know that no one else can hear me. Things, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true in a way that it's also very private, but like as an exercise, you know, that it's like exercising requires this freedom to show and present, to let it free.
Yeah.
So in order you could exercise this voice, like to use this voice later.
Yeah. Still working towards feeling okay in having others hear that voice. But yeah, the exercising of doing that and then exercise, because that's going to be real freedom, right? Or is really expressing those emotions and knowing that others might or might not hear you, but still feeling able to do so and feeling like safe to do so. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's take one more sip of cacao. I'm like here drinking and waiting for it, you know, to not interrupt the conversation with the sound of drinking.
This is the spoon stirring.
Spoon stirring the cacao.
Welcome to Rupert's ASMR. Every time I drink ceremonial cacao, it gets more palatable.
It's like, palatable.
Yeah, definitely training. The first time I ever had it, it was quite hilarious. I was, I'm part of a collective called Narration Group, and we had a cacao and voice, sacred cacao and voice healing ceremony with Lani Roccoli, who's like a sound artist and healer as well. And she performs these ceremonies. And we're on Zoom because it's the middle of lockdown. We all had our little cacao, which we'd made beforehand. And then it was just funny, all of us drinking it, like, and it was... because none of us had tasted it before, so it was a shock. And going from the smell as well, so it was a real shock. And he just had this screen of, like, I don't know, 10 of us, all of us, like, you know, pushing through.
Having your hard time to deal with the ceremony. A transforming drink, you know?
Yeah, completely. I like the spaces of silence as well, and conversations as well.
Yeah.
Just like these moments.
Yeah. And is cacao part of your practice, like in performance wise, or in your, for example, I know you're doing a PhD. Do you use it here as a way of, as one of your methods?
It's definitely used as a method, not so much as in, like, if I'm doing a performance or something, drinking cacao. I don't think I'd use it in that way. I'm liking it as this, like, private, mm-hmm. this private moment, or this, yeah, private practice. And then what is produced from that being used in my practice. Yeah, it's really interesting because when I first applied to do the PhD, like, I wrote about cacao in, like, my proposal, talking about it. And now that's something that, like, I've taken out. So I'm still writing about the PhD, but I've taken that out of it just because it's more of just something personal that I'm using it to using
kind of an entry point.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's an entry point for me. And then from drinking it, I produce, like, a material, which then I can use in my practice.
I think it's a, and then your PhD, I didn't ask before, but what is your subject? How do you frame it? How do you, like, expand it at the same time?
So it's a practice-based project, so it's through art making, and I'm exploring how tactility and presencing and fugitivity, and so, like, tactility is in how my body engages with other landscapes or colonial landscapes. Presencing, as in how we locate ourselves in environments and have a space of mutual understanding for spaces and care and restore for bodies of colour and like landscape spaces. And then fugitivity, as in, like, a practice of no longer being seen through a colonial lens. So I'm exploring how developing a practice of tactility, presencing, will turn into fugitivity as a way of, yeah, no longer as a body of colour being read through a colonial lens, and as a way of repair as well. So the PhD will involve me going to certain locations or landscapes in Wolverhampton, where I was born in England, and in London, where I've lived as an adult since I was 18, and going to places where I've experienced colonial violence and sort of engaging tactically with the spaces, and then also going to Australia, where I lived for a year, and I'm experienced sort of existing in a space as, well, it's my first experience of settler colonialism, and being a privileged body of colour in that space compared to the black and brown indigenous bodies there, but still experiencing colonial violence constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And then also going to Pelourinho in Brazil, which was the first site of slave markets in the New World. And it was like the sort of like Portuguese capital, basically. And I was there in like 2014. I went to Brazil. But it's exploring like developing a new reading, or trying to create a new reading of bodies of colour, no longer through a colonial lens, through tactically engaging in these sites of violence on a local, national and global landscape, but also thinking about my body as a landscape as well, and what that means. How has this body come to be? What has formed it? And what can happen if I think of myself as a landscape, engaging in these other landscapes? And how can repair happen for my body of colour and these spaces as well?
It sounds complex and at the same time very experience-based PhD.
Yeah.
Because as I understand, you... In many landscapes, mm-hmm. You engage directly through soil or mm-hmm. earth, through kind of those like primary materials.
Yeah.
And what does that mean to you?
It's a practice that I started like maybe 2-3 years ago now, of revisiting certain sites and engaging physically with the ground, so gathering. The first site I ever went to was like my old school grounds in Wolverhampton. I went to this path which I literally used to walk every day, and I just gathered like stones from it. And it was amazing. It's just this experience of connecting my body, locating my body tactically in this space, and creating agency for myself in this space as well. Yeah, it's kind of hard to explain, but it's like this moment. It is presencing for me. That is sort of a tactile engagement which invokes presencing for me. And then I started doing it in different locations as well, and also started some of the locations I was doing it in had like the ground as clay, basically. So then it was this really amazing sort of practice of I revisited a site where I had I'd experienced some colonial violence. The next day I called a friend and we went for a hike, and we were talking about what had happened. And as things were feeling better or more sort of resolved or calmer, just happened to turn around and there was like this humongous fallen tree, and I decided there and then just to gather the ground that was there, and that ground happened to basically be clay. And so over the course of like 3 months, I decided to go back to that location, and it was quite amazing, because it was like I had to travel like an hour and a half out, and then I had to walk into a forest because it was in like an old forest. Walk in to this forest, go for a hike basically, and then I began diarizing how I was feeling being in that environment and in that space, and what it felt to be a body of color, a female body of color, a female black body in this location where I didn't feel comfortable by myself, in a space which is normally presumed like not for you. And so experiencing that, dealing with all that anxiety, and then diarizing about it there and then, and also engaging. So I was gathering clay, putting them in little plastic bags, and I started doing like soil conservation practices like that are black, like black, brown, indigenous soil conservation practices as a way of engaging with the land as well. So I did that for like 3 months, over the course of 3 months. So yeah, this sort of, as a way of connecting, it's like a practice of connecting to a space and also recovering from a way of how can one repair from colonial violence. And yeah.
It seems like, remember when we were questioning if violence is solid or is it able to transform in different forms?
Yeah.
So in a way, I think through your practice, you are doing that earth and soil is recording.
Yeah.
You know, is a recording.
And then what does it mean for my body then to sort of engage with that recording of that ground and then to gather it? What does that mean?
Yeah.
It's, and I've used that clay, which I've gathered over time in artworks as well, where then I've like impressed my body onto the clay. So I've made beds of clay and pressed my body into it. Exploring sort of extraction of bodies of color and extraction of natural resources. Sort of these extraction of both and what it means to join my body back again. Yeah.
Yeah. Having a bit of a
cacao. Cacao. I
hope my teeth are not brown,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, yeah. It's like hanging up.
It's good we're not on the TV.
Yeah.
But I remember also just like speaking about body further, you know, like about different body practices and body language that... I can see, for example, as I understand also that you develop, right, like certain body language that is also writing and scripting certain experiences through your sculptural work.
Definitely, like my written stuff generally will turn into sound stuff, which will then be used in the making of like the physical material sculptural stuff. Since being at Rupert, I've been working on a written piece and it's writing about it and just also it's reading. So using the voice and as I'm writing, reading what I've written and sort of seeing what the repetition's like and then seeing what the spaces are like as well. So the work has on the page or on the laptop, they're sort of like open spaces or words are placed in odd spaces. And so it's very much like a writing practice through like the body and the voice as well.
Yeah. We were speaking that you might read us an excerpt. I would be so curious to hear it.
Okay. It's very much still a work in progress, but I'm happy to read it. Yeah, yeah. Shall I do it now?
Yeah. Okay.
I want to have another sip of cacao.
Yes, let's have it.
Translucent permanence lays within, comfortably seeping out from porous flesh, comfortably seeping in through this depleted ground, comfortably seeping out from within as this body concaves, folds in and out of itself, compressed and decompressed. Translucent permanence lays within, comfortably seeping in through this depleted ground, comfortably seeping out through this depleted ground, comfortably seeping in through this depleted ground, comfortably seeping out through this depleted ground, translucent permanence lays within, comfortably seeping in from within as this body concaves, folds out and in of itself, compressed and decompressed. I've been thinking about composting, imagining what it means for this body to compost, to sink back into the ground, to nourish what is beneath, to unravel and unbecome. The unbecoming of terra nullis to the becoming of rich black terra. Is this composting a means of presencing, feeling or indeed being one with the ground which surrounds me? By moving beyond and within a body, this black and brown and white body, this Nigerian body, this Benese body, this Togolese body, this Cameroonian body, this Congolese body, this Western Bantu body, this Northern Indian body, this Aruvian body, this Ghanaian body, this South Indian body, this Milan body, this Scottish body, this Irish body, this English body, this French body, this Welsh body, this Germanic body, this Northwestern European body, this Afro-Caribbean body, this South Central Afro-Jamaican body, this Black British body, this, these gendered and ungendered body bodies, this body, these bodies, this body, these bodies, without ease wrapped in multitudes of colonial pollutants and violence. Is composting a means of presencing, to move within a body, bodies held by questioned presence? As I imagine this body concaving, spreading, moving with other beings, how do the histories which formed this body, bodies, dissipate into the ground? Nourishing. Nourishing. Concaves and folds. Flesh pressed into flesh. Flesh entangled in flesh. Flesh dissipates into flesh, nourishing this landscape through positions of stress. This flesh lingers. Through it is in a position, through it is in a stress position. Flesh pressed into, onto flesh, the body is always in a stress position. Everything is a position of stress. Compressed and decompressed, detangled with earth, the curve of flesh, this flesh is in a position of stress. Flesh lying in a position of stress, nestled on, against, and in between. Flesh lying in a position of stress, nestled on, against, in between, joining, intertwined with, old life, new life, decay. This body seeps and pools, delivering itself. Some intimacy.
It's very beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
I like how you put the words together. Mm-hmm. It's very rhythmical, very beautiful rhythm-wise, I mean. And sounds very good when read aloud.
Yeah. I tried to work on it the other day downstairs at Rupert in like a communal area, and I had to come upstairs, and I hadn't realised at that point the importance of being able to read it out aloud while working on it, as like the rhythm and the spaces actually just comes from me reading it and where the position goes, which is something which I've like discovered from working on it here. Yeah.
That through reading, your body and voice kind of keeps writing the poem. It is kept being written. And I remember you read me the from the beginning, and it's interesting how it grew, the poem. Like it's now full of more meanings. It's more dense. It's like it's like as if you see something like a seed, and then it's like already, you know, has much more layers now.
And that kind of happened really quickly as well. Because I wasn't too, I don't know, I just felt like I wasn't getting anywhere with it. And then one night at like 1:30, I was in bed and I just got the laptop out. I just started. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. For ages, I was like, is this two separate bits of writing that I'm trying to make work? But I feel like it is one piece now, and it feels whole, and it makes sense to me now, which just kind of happened in the last couple of days. Mm.
I wanted to ask a question that came to my mind. When and how did you start making art?
I always did as a kid. I can say that I started as a kid. Like, I did as a kid. Like, my mom used to say that basically, because my mom's a nurse and she used to work night shifts. So her, like, she'd work night shifts and then my dad would go to work in the day. And so when she had me during the day, she said she would just like run herself a bath and she would just always put like art supplies down. And then she was like, you'd be quiet for hours just doing art. I was like, so I always made art and I always just really loved it. And so I did it as a teenager at school. And then instead of doing like A-levels in the UK, you do like A-levels as like before you go to uni. Instead of doing that, I did like an ABCE in art, which is like the equivalent of like, I think it's the equivalent of like two A-levels in art or something. So I decided to go to college and do that and then moved to London to do art. And after my degree, actually, I stopped making art.
Really?
Yeah.
How interesting.
I only started making art again about 4 years ago. Yeah.
What was it about, this break?
I stopped in 2010 until like mid-2017 or something, maybe 18. Yeah.
That was your coffee period.
Yeah, yeah. I was really into coffee. Yeah, I wanted to be a coffee roaster for a while, which I did. I stopped making art because I think when I did my BA, I was uncomfortable in making art about my experience as a female body of colour. And at the time, I didn't get support from where I was studying in understanding that and unraveling that. And I didn't do any critical reading in it. And it was just, I tried to make work about it, but I found it quite traumatic. And I just wasn't the right time, I don't think. So I took a break. And then in that break, I just got older and I also just started doing more reading and sort of getting agency, basically.
Finding like, affirmations probably also.
Yeah, empowering as well. And I definitely developed agency or encountered agency through through readings, through Black Feminist Thought. And I also just felt able to start making art again and have an art practice. That's when I was in Australia and studio was really cheap in Melbourne, which was also an issue when I was in London. I couldn't afford a studio when I was younger. So yeah, I just started making art, and when I was in Australia, I decided that when I came back to the UK, that I wanted to apply to do my master's. And so yeah, it's just that basically. So it's been actually very recent since making. Yeah,
it's interesting. Mm-hmm. How sometimes a break happens.
Yeah, and during that time, during that time, I stopped making art. I attempted to make some things and they were just really bad. But it was always like, I always felt like it sounds so bad. I always felt like I was an artist. Like, I always felt like I want to make art. I want to be an artist. But I just wasn't, it just wasn't the right time for me to be doing it. Yeah.
And because I think for a lot of artists, it is really like, you know, the subject and the matter of feeling safe.
Mm-hmm.
And probably especially dealing with certain subjects that you cannot deny the need of speaking about them, of feeling them, experiencing them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting also, as you said, you got older, you know?
Yeah.
And there is something that also probably comes with the...
with the age. Right. Yeah. Like, I feel like even now I'm working out how to have this art practice which deals with colonial violence, which I normally access, like, my practice through my body as well. So, like, my body's always a subject in my practice. So even now I'm dealing with how to kind of create space of repair and care for me engaging with this practice, and how to, look after myself. So when I was younger, like, I just didn't have the tools to do that. And now I'm learning how to do that as well, and learning the importance of, like, taking time out. Or, I mean, I think that's, like, all practices like the cacao and how to access these, which kind of then care for me again. But when you're younger... I mean, it's so difficult.
All around the place.
Yeah. You are like, woo! Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. The tools that we go collecting around, you keep collecting the tools.
Yeah.
And in order to start, like, you know, you need to have your set.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like you needed that break in order to prepare new set of tools.
Yeah, to gather the tools to figure out that does work, but I'm not as drawn to that, and then having time to go, oh no, I'll leave that and I'll take this. And yeah, completely.
And it's also a bit of a personal question, but as an artist, how you feel if you would need to say if you are, like, in the beginning or in, like, midst of your careers?
I think I'm very much, like, I view myself as, like, the start of it. Yeah, very much. Yeah, very much the start of my career, I think. Like, yeah, I've been fortunate to have opportunities and, like, some, really amazing opportunities and things like that. But I do view myself at the start of my career, for sure. Like, I still want to grow. I want to grow throughout my whole career as well, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's an interesting, how to say, just like a point to check in, right?
Yeah.
I'm just asking this question sometimes of myself, like, in certain areas of my life, like, am I here a beginner? Or it's very nice when in some areas you understand that, you already have an experience, you already know how to get around, and you get things faster, and they are being done fast, you know?
I find it quite interesting with art as well, because it's like this idea, like, emerging artists. So, like, think that I am at the beginning of my career, but also I'm like, I think I'm an emerging artist, but, like, an emerging artist can mean so many things to different people. So yeah, I think I think emerging is at the start, but some people say emerging is like the mid, or is that mid-career? I don't know.
For me, emerging is in the beginning. But it's a matter where you count the beginning, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can be, like, you know, in your 40s.
Yeah.
And this is the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's like a beginning of something completely new.
Yes.
Some artists, you know, they change their careers in terms of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start working with new subjects, new themes, all discourse is new. And in order to build the new tools... Mm-hmm. You are suddenly, again, an emerging artist in some way.
Yeah. I completely agree. And when you think of it like that, that's quite exciting, like, to have, maybe be like, I don't know, an experienced artist, but you can still be emerging in like your sort of thought practices, like, yeah, what you're now researching. That's exciting, right? To be able to sort of, I don't know, grow from and not be stagnant.
Yeah, but still, like, the quest to develop this kind of master art, you know, or like to develop this mastership in something. I think it's very beautiful when people, and especially when artists reach that. There is something very, very important for me, for example, to see the retrospective shows of the artists, you know, when you see like a big part of the work, and then you can really see, not necessarily in a linear way, but basically it's just like a fold-out map of person's life and their artistic career, and you see like what led where, what was connected to where, and how different it can be style-wise, expression-wise, language-wise.
Yeah.
But to see it as a whole. And this wall is something that you also get only after you walk a certain path.
Yeah, for a certain amount of time. It's like, yeah, I really do enjoy, yeah, retrospectives as well. I love just seeing the sort of quantity of stuff and sort of the, like, artists that you think of as being, I don't know, sculptors. And then you see, I don't know, like, drawing. You see other mediums as well in their work and experimentations. And just how they all feed one another. I really love that as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. To have like also like a connected, you know, artists, right? Yeah. Like the ideas that are in a certain brotherhood or sisterhood in themselves. Do you, as an artist, do you feel like you have your circle of, say, other artists that you support each other? You mentioned this group, narrative group, narration group.
I do feel, I do feel like I have, artists that I like are close to or connect with or support with. Like, narration group, we haven't met for a while. We haven't met since midway through COVID or something, I think. Just because of COVID, basically. But yeah, like, they, especially at the beginning when we first got together, I found it was just really supportive because we were artists and we're all women or non-binary people of colour, and we were meeting in an art. So we were part of a public programme at the South London Gallery. So we were all meeting in the South of London Gallery, and it was just this moment, but in a private space. And it was this moment every time we met up in there, it was just this moment of like breathing together and relaxing and just not feeling so alone as like bodies of colour working within, you know, white institutions in London, like as artists or as gallery staff or both, which was the case for a lot of us. And that support was really amazing, especially sort of, you know, I've been making art, started making art again at that point for like a year or a year and a half. So that was really amazing. I made some really close friends from that group. And then, yeah, I've got close friends at who I've met at uni as well on my MFA. But before, I didn't really have any artist friends before 4 years ago, because I hadn't been making art, and I was not going to exhibitions at all. I wasn't doing any of that. I wasn't even like, so I didn't have any artist friends then.
I remember actually what you are saying about this, white institutions is 6 or 5 years ago. But I remember also that I was doing a show and then hanging out a lot in London, and Yeah, thinking about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
No matter which crowd you go, you end up in a very normal crowd.
Yeah, yeah, very white space.
Normal.
Yeah.
Saying between the brackets. Yeah, and I was then also like thinking, huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a very outspeaking situation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why, yeah, when we, like, narration group was such a, like, it is such a, like, pivotal thing, in, like, a pivotal sort of, like, if a group or space for me, as in, like, getting agency as well, and coming together, and, yeah.
And the very title, narration group, right? Like writing your own narrative in a way.
Completely, that's what it, yeah, that's what it.
Yeah. Well, Davinia, thank you for sharing this time with me.
Thank you for inviting me to. It's been really nice.
Yeah, I'm really happy to have a conversation with you. Somehow to have a talk with you is also like a soothing experience.
Ditto. Oh no, that's the cacao.
That's the cacao, probably also.
Yeah. Still got a little bit left.
Oh! For me, the last bit was hardest.
Did it have all the, like, did it all sediment?
Probably. Probably.